This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. This week, it's D Who Are Dandy as Don's dumped. And United's promotion push must punish Pars. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Twa Teams One Street. I'm Tom Duthie, and podcasting alongside me today are George Cran.
Hello.
Graham Finnan.
Hello, everyone.
And back from 2 weeks' holiday, Alan Temple.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am refreshed and excited to be seeing your lovely face again.
Taking that too far.
I know. Did you believe it? I was pushing for sincerity.
I just think he hasn't seen any games. That's why he's so cheery.
How dare you? One of the first things I did when I crossed the border back from England was report for duty on Saturday. So I was at Tannadice for the Arbroath game.
Yeah.
I figured officially coming back to work on Monday, I should have some idea of what I was talking about. So I covered the game on Saturday.
Never stopped Tom for years and years.
No. I know, but Tam's got a certain je ne sais quoi that I just can't match.
It took me to go to the games I was supposed to go to. But I always did, by the way. I was late once and I missed.
Three goals.
Two for Fabrizio. I turned up at Broadway and the boy said, oh, you're only 5 minutes late, but it's 2-1. I said, very funny. And he said, I'm no joking, son. Two Fabrizio Ravanelli goals. He scored one hat trick. And I only saw one goal.
That was in the good old days before online live reporting, Tam. You just wrote your stuff at the end. Somebody told you what happened.
Yes. That was one thing.
I'm really tempted to go back and find that match report because I bet you styled it. I bet he wrote it as if he saw it and trying to give everyone all the analysis.
Yeah, funny enough, the third goal of his hat trick was by far the best one in my report, strangely.
The best one you saw, certainly.
Talking about great Dundee victories, George.
Yeah.
You were at one last night.
It's very
having
good.
Spent all that money, listeners and viewers, because if you switch YouTube on, you can watch us on YouTube, don't forget. They're having a go at me for my Dickensian language when it comes to technology. You spent all that money to go and see a team in dark blue and Rome on Saturday. That didn't work out so well.
No.
But the team in dark blue with the right-shaped ball did you proud last night against Aberdeen.
Yeah, it's far better watching proper sport, I have to say.
Proper sport, you understand.
And Dundee were very good. The manager said it was one of the best performances of the season. I wasn't at the Samirin game, so it's probably, I don't know how it compares to that, but it was the best performance I've seen from them this season. It should have been far more than 1-0.
Yeah, 1-0 didn't do...
It doesn't do them justice at all.
And anyone who happens to have strayed in from the Aberdeen side of the track,
wow,
you got humped.
You got humped 1-0. Humped 1-0. Yeah, it doesn't quite sound right.
One of the biggest 1-0 hammerings I've seen in a long time.
It is. It's particularly in the first half. I mean, it was one-way traffic. To be fair to Aberdeen, they did come out and give it a go in the second half, but they were really poor. And
George has been
Dundee.
Nice. What he means is the broken jog. Yeah. I joke about Aberdeen, it's northeast coast rivalry and all that, but I like to be moaning about Aberdeen when they're in their true position as challenging to be the third force in Scotland. But that Aberdeen team.
It's a shadow of an Aberdeen side, but
that should not be.
It's up to Dundee to go and beat them, and they did that. And they looked really confident right from the start. You could see that they absolutely fancied it. It was just getting that finishing touch that escaped them for much of the game, but they got a wee bit of luck with the penalty. It was harsh. It kind of landed on the boy's arm, but you got to, when you
was
get the chance.
By
the rules, it's a penalty.
I didn't see it at the time, and a lot of people in the stadium didn't see it, and it took forever on VAR to actually give it. But when I saw the highlights on the television last night, I think it's a penalty kick. I mean, Jack McKenzie.
I think it's just unlucky from the defender's point of view because he doesn't.
I think what there's all this natural position of your arms.
I think what took so long was I think there was a possible offside with Joe Shaughnessy, which is why, and that was
what they were worried about.
Only VAR could get you both sets of fans booing at the same time, and that's what happened last night. And obviously Dundee were cheering when they got the award, but it did take a while. But I think that's why, you know, it was given. And George said it was harsh, but it was no harsher than the one that Hearts got for Lee Ashcroft's handball earlier on in the season at Dens. So Yeah, when I saw it on the TV, I thought, I thought it was a penalty kick.
As soon as that happens, I don't think the ref can really ignore it. That's the thing. But
for me, it's a question of whether or not you like the rule about arms in a natural position. Because who was the defender?
Jack McKenzie.
Yeah, there's no way he intentionally played the ball.
No,
and he didn't do enough to give away the penalty without the handball. But what he's done is he's put his arms up onto the Dundee player in front of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that can't count as a natural position in the sort of act to jump in to head the ball.
And I've got to say, I don't think he has to, because there is another arm. I think it's McDonald, possibly Zaire or Gartman Zaire, to head her in behind Portala. So I don't know why Jack McKenzie actually gets involved. I think he's a victim
of his own bad defending in a way, isn't he? He's unlucky that the ball hits his arm, but he didn't have to be there. No. He didn't have to put his hands out to find the player in front of him. And we are more interested in Dundee, but it was typical Aberdeen's night, wasn't it? Everything they did was poor.
Yeah, it was. And it was.
And we've got to play them again.
Yeah. the fans, to be fair, a lot of fans came down from Aberdeen.
Yeah, they were support.
They were booing within 1:20.
George had the stop.
I couldn't believe it. The keeper launched it out for a throw, and then they started booing. I thought,
you're in trouble.
But that, as I say, it's up to Dundee to go and get the win, because they needed that victory. It's obviously popped them back into the top six, which is great. Looking down the table, they're miles away from Ross County now, and Aberdeen are out of the picture. I had a wee sneaking suspicion if Aberdeen somehow turned up and got a win last night that they would only be 3 points behind Dundee and might be back in that race, but their performance showed that they're never in that race. And now the points show that too.
Yeah, it's a bit like, I'm always scared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still looking. The first thing I did last night after the final whistle was look down to 11th place.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm always worried that Dundee are going to be in a relegation battle. And as George says, you're thinking if Aberdeen sneak a win here, Aberdeen could still end up in sixth place and, you know, dash Dundee and Hibs' hopes. But we're really, not to be cruel, we're really actually looking at Aberdeen's reputation rather than their team when we think that, aren't we? Because they're way short of where they should be.
There was a spell last night where Ross County were beating Hibs, and it was 0-0 at Dens, and, you know, had Aberdeen sneaked a goal and managed to get a win and Ross County had held on, then it would have been, Dundee could have been sort of, I think, looking over their shoulder a wee bit. So that's why it was such a big result, the win for Dundee, more than sort of Hibs coming back at County and getting a point. And at the end, Tony Docherty normally comes across to the fans, but I think without him saying it, he sort of, his acknowledgement of the fans, certainly in the South enclosure, was, we've done it. Mm-hmm. We have basically, last night's result confirmed, we're not getting dragged into any dogfight at the bottom, which it does, obviously. But I always thought Dundee were strong enough anyway, you know, not to be dragged in. You just fear that might happen because of where Dundee have been in the past, Tom. And, you know, we've been sort of 9 points clear going into the last five games and getting relegated at one season, if I remember rightly. But yeah, I mean, you always look at the opposition, and Aberdeen were poor. Now, if there's a case for not changing your manager multiple times during the season, this is it, because Aberdeen look absolutely woeful, bereft of ideas, confidence absolutely rock bottom. Guys like Graham Shinney, Scotland international, Conor Barron, tipped as a future Scotland full international. Dundee just didn't let them near the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Dundee's midfield, McEwen, Mo Silla, you know, just
Silla,
Cameron
Silla
was outstanding again, you know, but Dundee were fantastic all over the
park. I thought the three in the middle really stood out for Dundee, the Cameron, Silla and McEwen.
I've got to say, they thoroughly merited the victory, and that's, you know, that's sort of what's the story in most of the papers this morning and you know, on the media. Dundee thoroughly deserved to win. It could have been by more had they been a wee bit more had a bit more of a cutting edge in front of goal, but the real positive for me, Tom, this is a Dundee side that started without Trevor Carson, started without Ricky Lamy, Jordan McGee, Josh Mulligan, Owen Beck,
the list goes on.
Amadou Bakayoko. Now, some of these guys are injured. Some of them didn't get a jersey. And it shows so how
you
strong...
You might have expected Mellon, if things had gone better, to be a starter by now.
It shows how strong Dundee have become during the course of this season. And now, obviously, they can't afford to look up. They've got four games to go to get themselves into that top six. And I've been a Dundee fan, I've looked at Hibs fixtures and I see that they've got home games against Livingston and St Johnstone. We've got home games against Rangers and Motherwell. We've got to go back to Aberdeen and we've got to go to St Johnstone as well. Four games left. How many points do we need to get in that top six? I would reckon about six, maybe seven. So we'll wait and see, but all good, a fantastic. As the manager said, one of the best performances, I think he said. St Mirren obviously stands out. I think the win against Ross County was very professional. I think the win against Hearts right at the start of the season, their first win in the Premier League that was the opener for me, saying, yeah, we can survive, we can do well in this division. So all in all, you know, a great night's work for Dundee, and things look really positive.
The other thing that Tony Docherty was at pains to point out after the game, just reading George's stuff, was the fact that it's a clean sheet, and that is unbelievably important, because, you know, while Dundee have rightly been praised for what has been a really solid return to the top flight that's going to comfortably end with them staying up, conceded the joint most goals in the division. You know, 50 from 29 games is a lot of goals to concede.
Also highlighted last week, the league goals.
Yeah. So it's that is something that evidently from Tony Docherty, having spotlighted that after a performance where they could have scored about six goals, is clearly something that's been playing on his mind and clearly something that's been addressed. So, well, addressed certainly in that one fixture. They'll hope it's a sign of things to come.
I think it's a really positive sign that they've got a manager who could spot that problem.
Aberdeen are not getting.
And sees, spots the opportunity with not having a game over the weekend to get the players on the training ground for 10 days and properly work on it and make sure.
And you spoke about the mental side as well, George. There is a mental side because the game was going into stoppage time. We knew there was going to be a lot of stoppage time.
And they were chucking the balls into the box.
7 minutes.
Yeah.
And the fans get anxious, and that does spread from the terraces onto the park. But they were pretty
sure. There was a wee murmur of that last night. There was a couple of minutes where they were kicking the ball out of play in any direction. Yeah.
That's inevitable though, isn't it?
Yeah, because of what's happened, you know, too many times this season when they've been in a winning position. And to me last night, they seemed to calm down.
Yeah.
The experienced players seemed to get a grip at everybody. Yeah. And I mean, it helped that the opposition weren't playing well. But
there was still a couple of balls into the box that got flicked on another day. It might have snuck in, but speaking to John McCracken actually after the game, the goalkeeper, he was talking about how he didn't have a save to make, basically.
Yeah,
which he did well with a couple of cross balls.
Yeah,
a couple of punches under pressure.
Yeah.
Without having a worldy save, I thought he had an excellent game coming in. You know, for Trevor Carson, who's quite a presence.
Yeah,
in his own box, I thought he commanded his area and seemed to be communicating with his defence. It was quite impressive.
He's a very confident goalkeeper, and I think you can see that in his play. You can tell that when you speak to him as well. I liked his wee drag back that skinned Miovski. It looked like he was in trouble and the striker was going to close him down, and he just
The manager and the fans enjoyed it as much as usual.
Put his foot on the ball. I didn't think he was in much danger. No. But,
he is very comfortable on the ball, I've got to say. Yeah.
Is he alone signing it? There's a prospect of more from him? Or
well, I don't know.
Is his future down south? Because he looks... no complaints about Trevor Carson, but he's not young.
Mm-hmm. So still has another 2 years in his contract, though, so...
I'll keep getting them on. Which one has 2 years on?
Carson.
That might actually, even if the boy's getting offloaded by at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that.
You might think, well, Carson's here.
Tony Docherty might fancy that. That's possible. He certainly looks the part. You wonder what the future holds for Harry Sharp and Adam Legsden, who still have. I think we've still got another year on the deals as well.
I've done the open this sort of goalkeepers academy. Their number one was in the stand. They had two on the bench and another one. They've got more first team keepers than any other club in the country.
Well, it's not terrible.
I'm not criticising George.
You'd play all four of them. Well, you wouldn't have any worries with it. You'd play all four of them.
You'd play all four of them and still get seven at Parkhead.
Yeah. play them all and go.
Oh, yes.
Right, okay.
It's good enough for Steve Clark to have four goalkeepers. I know. Sure it's good enough for Dundee. Absolutely.
More goalkeepers and strikers, yeah.
You could rotate them. That might help them. Because that's what... It's one of the rules of one of the laws of the game I love is this thing. It's, you could put four goalkeepers on the park, and every time the ball goes out of play, you're allowed to change your goalkeeper.
Like, quite surprisingly, the only four goalkeepers they've all had a start this season. Some keepers that when clubs have got two keepers and one boy stays in the entire season, and the other guy's kicking his heels on the bench, but they've all had a start. I've got to say so.
Well, you guys on the Manchester City goalkeeper on Sunday at Anfield when he came on was. Why now? I've sat here all season. Why now?
Exactly. You guys are the experts on this then. So if everyone is fit and firing and ready for a start, who's Dundee's number one?
Trevor Carson.
Carson, I think.
Without a doubt. With McCracken coming in, keeping a clean sheet.
Carson gets it a bit.
He's given the manager
I do think that he's given him something to think about. As you say, George. And I think long term, I think we do know Trevor Carson... He has issues.
He's missed a couple of games.
He does. So
it's an age thing, isn't it?
McCracken's thinking about it, and sees an opportunity, and the age of Carson could be the time for him to maybe, make the move and go for it. But you don't know what's happening down south. That's a problem.
Right? I always think it's a fascinating thing with goalkeepers and such a challenge for managers, because it's the one position where managers will generally say, see, if you've got the jersey and you're playing well and you don't make any mistakes, the jersey's yours. But you then maybe sometimes find yourself in an awkward position where the goalkeeper that you know is maybe slightly better, more experienced, is there on the bench. And you can sense that the manager's maybe wants to bring him back in, but it's a big call to do so. I look at, for example, over at Hearts. With the best will in the world to him, Craig Gordon is better than Xander Clark. Mm-hmm. But you can't drop Xander Clark. He's doing very, very, very well and is an exceptional goalkeeper.
It's Xander Clark's age. If you do drop Xander Clark, there's every chance that he's saying, well, I want to go somewhere else. And I'm a first-team goalkeeper now. But because you raised Hearts, Alan, I totally get this thing where what Stephen Naismith is probably going to do is play Xander Clark in the league for the rest of the season. But I also understand why Steve Clark would take Craig Gordon to the Euros as a backup goalkeeper, because he's so experienced and he's proved that he could get over injury and get himself totally fit. And like you say, it's a strange world, goalkeepers. I mean, I know some managers once the days of goalkeeping coaches came in, some managers were quite happy to say to the goalkeeping coach, you tell me who's playing in goal.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's such a specialist position a thing.
And it's perhaps the most mentally demanding position on the pitch in terms of how important your confidence and belief and mentality is in it. So that's another thing that the managers need to... So I just think it's a fascinating decision that Dundee have got to make, but... Yeah, I'll trust you guys if it's Carson.
I don't think there's a wrong decision. I think that's the beauty of it, because John McCracken, he's only played a couple of games really, but he looks every inch that he could be very capable to be Dundee's number one.
Well, it's great credit Carson's to him to come in and play so well.
Exactly.
When he's not playing regularly, he just looked very impressive. Yeah. He looked very composed and totally in control.
He's got quite a good stature for a keeper, Tom. He's a big lad, but he's a big lad that uses his height and his build well, because he comes out and gets fists on balls and gets in amongst
them. And heads as well. He gave Gartman a good comp last night. But yeah, I don't think there's an issue there. I think you could see that they were aware that Trevor Carson would miss some games, I think, because of this niggling knee injury that flares up every now and then. So you can kind of see why Tony Docherty was so keen to get McCracken back, so he's got that kind of extra option there.
It's good that you don't need to rush Carson back as well. That makes a big difference, doesn't it? Because you, as you alluded to, another 2 years in his contract, you don't want to be doing any sort of long-term damage. So, actually give him the time to recover properly.
When he sees the way the boy played, Carson might be rushing himself. I don't want him doing that 3 or 4 games in a row.
Perhaps.
Moving slightly forward, in recent podcasts, not certainly in the not-too-distant past, we touched on the fact that at times, as entertaining as Dundee were when they played Tiffany, McCowan and the young lad.
Cameron,
Lyle Cameron, yes.
I could have helped you
there. That was my Jack Charlton impersonation there, by the way. Get the young lad on. We thought that they're great to watch, but they'll eat goals. How do you have these three in your team and find defensive solidity? Tony Docherty's found a way. But, I mean, Cillo was obviously the obvious answer, but it seemed in my simple world, it seemed one of them's got to be on the bench.
Yeah.
Cillo comes in the team, but last night, to great effect, he had them all in the team and Cillo was outstanding behind them. He gives him so much freedom, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's obviously pushed Tiffany further up the field.
Yeah, yeah.
He was fantastic, Cillo was, and he has been the rock since the turn of the year for
Dundee. He's just so strong, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's shown a lot of calmness in possession as well. While he's getting tackles and he's able to get his head up and uses the ball very well. And yeah, he's given a platform for guys like McCowan, Cameron and Tiffany to go and do what they do. I've got to say, Tiffany is... We've spoken about Tiffany and he's broken into the team recently. And he's... I think we've got the pest from Partick back again. Because he was always... When I spoke about Tiffany at Partick and he was a pest. He just kept going and going and never stopped. But he seemed to have lost his weight at Denzel. He had a couple of injury issues, lost a bit of confidence. But now he's back and he doesn't give defenders a minute, you know. And he gets in front of them and he gets underneath them. And sometimes he's touching on the ball isn't brilliant, but he's got a low centre of gravity. He'll get the break of the ball on and he takes the ball with him and he gives defenders real issues. And it's working really well for Dundee. And that's... If he wants to stay in that team, that's the sort of level of performance he needs. But I think it was a confidence thing, Tam, and he's got that now. And combined with McCowan and Cameron, you know, they look fantastic going forward. When they go forward at pace, they look a great, great team. And you do have to weigh up the balancing act when it comes to the defensive side of things. But they do it quite well. They're pretty cute the way they do it. One man will stay up the park. It's normally Tiffany, I think. If they're defending a corner, for example... There's a good chance we'll stick one of the smaller men on the front six, so you've got one man to pick up.
I've noticed recently when they have a corner, they often put McCowan back. Which is actually, obviously it shows that the manager must trust them defensively.
Definitely, yeah.
But in terms of tactical play, it's not bad because he's so confident on the ball and uses it so well that suddenly if he's the man that picks up the ball on the halfway line, it's another attack.
They've got pace as well, of course, and if there's a break, you can't cover the ground. You should sometimes see if Beck's, although Beck tends to take most of the set plays, I've got to say, but yeah, they'll leave two men back with a bit of pace just in case they get caught. But you're right, when the ball does come out, it's not just getting hoofed back in. For the sake of it, you get somebody who can actually play a ball back in.
You would tend to think the boy that scores spectacular free kicks,
puts the ball.
Free kicks right on people's head, takes the penalties, you would think he would take the corner or be on the edge of the box.
Yeah.
But no, he's back in that. He's back on the halfway line. It's a good spot by Tony Dock. But I think Cillo is a huge player for them, isn't he? At my one game of the season in person, he was very good, but looked a bit leggy.
Yeah.
Recent games, he looks like he's got his match fitness.
Well, the great thing for Dundee is he isn't a lone signing, Jordan. He's signed
his contract. As far as I'm aware, his contract ends at the end of the season. Right, well,
if I was Dundee, I'd be getting him snapped up.
He's grown.
Can't grow much more.
He's grown into the...
He's got a couple inches yet.
into the team, really, because he had to wait so long to even see him, really. Because Malachi Boateng was playing so well in the first half of the season. His form dipped a wee bit and still has got his chance and he's absolutely grabbed it with both hands. I think he's been excellent. On Tiffany, actually... I think what spoke volumes for his performance was that Michael Mellon was left on the bench. Mm-hmm. You'd have thought that with his finishing ability and the chances that were coming, Mellon was going to get a chance and he was just going to come in.
His physicality and mobility, I think, 10 minutes to go and you're 1-0 up, put him on and at least he keeps the...
Tiffany was given so many problems that the manager just didn't want to take him off until like the last few minutes when they're holding out. But I thought that was notable because we've seen how Mellon can finish when he gets a chance, and you'd banked on him doing that in the second half, but they didn't need him.
Just as we speak about Tiffany, I'm trying to think who he puts me in mind of, and not particularly in his style of play, but in terms of potential, is he the new Nacho Novo, and that there's more to come from him? Because one thing I would say, and he's a great entertainer, and hey, maybe I'm just talking rubbish, because it's not unknown, but he's the kind of player that I always think when he gets the ball, the other team are on their toes, but so is his own team, because nobody really knows where he's going. And if I look, the few times I've seen him, I would say where there's room for improvement is sort of reading of situations when he gets the ball. Sometimes he, as I say, it's great to watch, but he goes off on a mazy and ends up in the corner at the corner flag when maybe there's something on that he doesn't quite spot.
Similar interesting comparison. Similar type players. Where Nacho Novo had the edge was his finishing. Nacho Novo, I mean, you'll have to check the stats on that one. But Nacho Novo's literally
just pulled up a page. I was curious as to where to, because it feels like the difference is the kind of efficiency and the final third when it comes to getting a shot away. And Scott Tiffany's scored, he's 25 now, and he's scored 34 goals in his entire career. So that's evident. But then again, he would say, I've largely been played out wide and often. So it was interesting to see how we can develop in this role, because as I recall, and I'm doing this from memory, Nacho Novo wasn't exactly a 30 goal a season striker immediately. He played sort of wide and then had to grow into that role. So there's maybe development to be done. It's certainly really interesting what they're doing with his role.
Nacho's thing was also his link play. They worked very, very, very hard on that when he came to Dundee, because he could get into scoring positions and he would take the ball and run towards goal, but every once in a while he would pass to a teammate, and it wasn't because he was just being greedy, it was because he never saw a pass and didn't execute a pass, so it took a lot of work, whereas I tend to think in terms of natural ability, Tiffany's probably got more. He doesn't have that goal sense, but I think he could also improve his link play at times.
Yeah, I think so. Which, again,
as Alan says, he's been playing wide. And when you're wide, you're looking across it. You're not looking to play wee cute balls all the time.
And Tony Docky has been very pleased with the combination of Tiffany and Main. He's kind of mentioned that a couple of times in the last couple of games. Must help him
have been. It's experience beside him.
Yeah, I think so. I thought that was Main's best game last night.
He's been a slow burner for us, Main. He's taken a while to get up to speed, but you can see what he's going to bring. What he's bringing to the club and what he's going to bring in the future. I think he just needs a goal. I think he's had two disallowed
already, but
he's had a couple of chances. I think just for his own sake, he needs to find the back of the net.
Also, just for clarity, Nacho Novo scored 20 goals in his first season for Raith Rovers. So shut up, Alan. I'm talking absolute rubbish. He was a good finisher from day one. just before anyone else decides to insult me
you know what? I agree with you. Natural finisher, but he scored a lot of goals. He was one of those that kept going, because he always went back. If he had a miss, didn't bother him. He kept going. He kept getting into positions.
34 in two seasons for Dundee.
Okay, fair enough.
So, which is more than in his first season he passed to a teammate. That's my point.
Unlucky
There's
Scott.
Always something you can work on.
Unlucky Scott Tiffany, you've got some work to do. To live up to Tams.
One of the reasons why, I mean, it almost sounds like an end of season celebration. Imagine being able to do that with Dundee in March. That's unheard of. But one of the reasons for that, of course, is they do have Rangers on Sunday.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, crashing Novo down. Yes.
It's not been... not been great against Old Firm this season. It's the one thing, actually Tony Docky has mentioned a few times, that's the one thing he's really not happy about is the way they've kind of capitulated a few times against the Rangers and Celtic. Obviously the last time at Dens was a very strange night with the late kickoff, because their bus got delayed, and then the pyro. So hopefully we don't have any of that.
I've got to say, it was a strange game in itself because of that, and the delayed kickoff, and then I think Rangers scored early doors.
And Dundee changed the system as well. I remember Portales was playing right back or something.
But Dundee were in the game, and it was 2-0, I think, until about the last 10-15 minutes, and Tony Dock was really disappointed that it ended up a 5-0, but it's not like Dundee. But yeah, they've got... I think that's what Dundee fans are looking for. They've got to do better against the Old Firm. And there's no reason why they shouldn't. Other teams are able to do it. Why can't Dundee do it? I don't know what it is. I really don't. They've just been unfortunate and they've picked Rangers and Celtic when they've, you know, certainly that night at Parkhead a few weeks back, I mean, everything Celtic hit went in the back of the goal, you know. Yeah. And you just can't legislate for that sometimes. But they need to do better. I'm sure Tony Dock would like to see, you know, a much stronger performance on Sunday. And they've got to try. Every game now, you're in a situation where you've got to try and pick up points in every single, 4 games to go, pick up points in every game. You might surprise Rangers and get something there, which could go a long way to getting you into that top 6 spot.
And their home form has been good from Dundee, particularly lately. So, yeah, and they don't get much opportunity to be on TV either. Nobody gets to see Dundee apart from Dundee fans. I think this is only the second time all season.
That's the secret of their success.
Yeah.
Nobody knows them.
I don't know why. They're quite a decent team to watch.
You can have some of United's TV if you want. I'm pick sick of Friday night.
I've got to say, as a supporter, getting kickoffs at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It's been good, yeah.
And, you know, the strange thing about their catastrophes against both halves of the Old Firm this season, and another thing we've mentioned a few times on the podcast this season, the Jockey Scott team of 99-2000, annihilated by Rangers and Celtic. Yeah. But they've got this ability to shrug it off. Mm-hmm. And we hear, I mean, there was all the right talk about we owe it to the fans after the 7-1 at Parkhead and it's not good enough. And hopefully it is a lot better. But they've got this thing. If it is a disaster on Sunday, the next game, it doesn't seem to be an issue.
No.
I mean, well done to Tony Docherty, these players. Not for those results, but for the way they react to them.
Yeah, I think that comes with what I spoke about a wee bit earlier, Tam. They've now got you're not banking on your 12 men or 11 or 12 men that are regulars in the team. He's scored about 18 guys now. He can rotate quite easily. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a sort of really bad performance, you are able to bring in 3 or 4 changes without it really upsetting the way the team's functioning, and that's a big plus. But yeah, that's what they've done all season. They've bounced back well. They've won the games they've had to win. I think back to the 2 big wins against St Johnstone and Ross County, which really opened up that gap at the bottom, George. And you know, and they are making, I hate saying this, but they are making dens a wee bit of a fortress. That's 3 wins and a draw in the last 4 games. Now, we'll find out on Sunday if it's a fortress, certainly, against a Rangers team that know they need to win every game, you know, for the title. So I think it's set up quite well. I hope Dundee can go and show live on television that they're a good side and go and play. I was disappointed. When they played Rangers at Ibrox, I was really disappointed because Rangers went down. Dundee were in front and then gifted a goal right back, and it was 1-0 up. But Rangers went down to 10 men. I think Dundee were 2-1 down, I think, at the time, weren't they? I think, was it 2-1?
It might have been 3. I can't remember.
Was it 3? But they should have done better. Anyway, against 10 men in the second half, they should have done a lot better than they did, and it was... they didn't play at all that day. So let's see something on Sunday. It might shock a few people.
So, Alan, since you were a teacher's pet and travelled all those miles from your holiday to see United before you had to...
I was back on Friday, to be fair. I didn't go straight to Tannadice.
I was hoping you got the wife and bairn up at 4 in the morning and said, we've got to get to Tannadice, I'll drop you on the way.
Yeah, she's very much a football widow, but I think that would have been a step too far even for them.
But just what you wanted from United on Saturday.
Yeah, it was very professional. I thought both were awful. Which obviously kind of mitigates what...
They weren't as good as that one.
Yeah, exactly. It would be no exaggeration to say that Dundee United could have won 7 or 8-0. They hit the bar, missed 2 one-on-ones. Young Max Boric, who replaced Derek Gaston after 25 minutes, made a couple of cracking saves. So it really could have been a proper embarrassing afternoon for Jim McIntyre's men. But as... you know, you guys alluded to when talking about Dundee beating a woeful Aberdeen. You can only beat what's put in front of you, and United did that really well. Glad to see Fotheringham back on the score sheet. He, as every single young player who's enjoying a breakthrough season does, has you know, dipped and troughed a little bit in recent months, but showed the sort of instinctiveness that a lot has characterised a lot of his good moments this season to really settle the nerves early door. Double from Tony Watt, who was exceptional throughout, and a really good second half cameo from Alex Grieve getting his first goal, which will do him the world of good because he's a player who you can never question his application or his attitude. He's played wide, he's played through the middle, he does not stop running, just a perpetual motion. But in terms of that moment to sort of kickstart things in the final third, an assist and a goal in the space of 45 minutes is really positive for him. So it completed a 17-0 clean sweep over Arbroath over the course of this season.
Are you listening, Ewan Smith?
So I think for different reasons, both sides will be absolutely delighted to see the back of each other next season. United, hopefully, because they've made it to the Premiership, and Arbroath, regardless of what division they may be in, just hopefully never having to take another smashing from their friends down the road. So, professional stuff from United, and at that moment, it maintained their four-point lead, which is what you need to do, but obviously Rovers have then cut that back to one. So, it's shaping up to go the distance.
Yeah, I mean, in your absence last week, I said to Craig, the United's narrow win at Morton, that's what wins championships. And that's my only worry this week is Wraith have gone and done the same thing at Partick. A 1-0 win, that's a kind of...
Yeah.
Which shows they're not going away, are they?
No, both teams are showing the sort of results that wins you championships, which is what's making it such a fascinating title race. Neither side... deserves a great deal of criticism at this point. Particularly if United fail to win the title, they will get a lot of criticism because they will have ultimately failed to do what they set out to, and that's rightly so. But at this moment in time, they're on course to be the highest point scoring champions since Rangers. Both teams are on course should they win their remaining games, for example. So it's, I think Dundee won the league with 63 last season. United already have 58. So, although United fans will be sitting uncomfortably and would wish that their team has a more comfortable lead at the summit, they've not done a great deal wrong at this point. It's just about how good and how fitting a challenger Wraith Rovers have been. And as you say, they're not going away. So both teams at the moment just deserve their flowers, and we'll see how it pans out before any sort of, remonstrations and repercussions about whoever might win the league.
Just imagine it was still the olden days, or it's not even that long ago, but before the playoffs when there was only one went up.
That would be absolutely brutal, wouldn't it?
The tension in the title race would be ramped up even further.
Yeah. So, to be fair, I do think I worry about the team that doesn't win the league. If you've been eyeing automatic promotion for the best part of 8 months.
I only looked back at Queen's Park last year. I mean, I got absolutely murdered from Park, and I don't know what the final score was. It must have been 8-0 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you're slightly concerned about the team that doesn't win this league, so United need to ensure that that's not them.
Well, in terms of, I'm not saying promotion for sure, but in terms of getting to the playoff final, you would have, the way the league's panned out, you would have a sneaking suspicion for the team in third or fourth, particularly fourth just now, because it's going to take a good run of form to secure fourth place. And I mean, like, it's Morton are there just now. If they finish fourth, they were in relegation trouble.
They need Oakley
not
back
so long ago.
That's your key thing for
Morton. They've been missing.
They need Oakley back. They're not the same team without George Oakley. So that would be my concern for Morton. But to your wider point, absolutely. It's all about momentum. And by definition, the team that doesn't win the league will, even if they, do reasonably well towards the end of the season, they will feel deflated. And I watched the full game in Thistle against Wraith Rovers, and
sorry, I got distracted by the Champions League.
At some point you've got to take your hat off, because Wraith Rovers, although they defended sensationally, all the credit in the world for that, they were largely on the defensive all day against Partick. Uh-huh. So
Partick had the post and stoppage down, didn't he?
Had
all the play. Played some really nice stuff in the first half, but Raith Rovers get a set piece, curl it in, header, goal. And that's, at that point, you do start to think, you know what, maybe your luck's in.
I've got to say, I mean, I saw that game, the Partick game against Raith. I also saw about the Dunfermline game.
They make me feel guilty, John.
Dunfermline game against Raith.
Between the two, don't worry.
Yeah, and Raith Rovers aren't playing brilliantly as they were through the start of the season, first half of the campaign. There's no doubt about that. But what I would say is the last two results, I'll have them thinking that they're back on it, because that night they had up at Gayfield when they capitulated and they were 2-0 up and ended up losing 3-2. I honestly thought this could be game set and match for Raith Rovers here. You know, losing to the team that are at the bottom of the league by some margin after being holding the two-goal lead. But they've managed to edge it back again. They're not playing brilliantly. Alan's right. Partick were the better team during the week. But Raith managed to grind out a couple of wins. I don't think against Dunfermline, what I saw, they were brilliant. But they managed to get the result. I think in the end they had a better cut and edge than Dunfermline. Dunfermline was a wee bit short shy. We'll probably come on to them later on. You know what it is, Tom? There's a pressure pendulum now. And what Raith Rovers have done with that win during the week has pushed the pressure pendulum towards Dundee United. Dundee United have got to win now against Dunfermline on Friday night and push it back Raith Rovers' way. And we're getting into a stage now where one slip could be fatal here, because we're basically down to the last 7 or 8 games, I think it is. And everybody can see the finishing line in sight. And the closer you get to the finishing line, the more you believe that you can actually do this. You don't have to win 12 games. You don't have to win 10 games. You don't have to win 8 games. You might only have to win 4 games and you are the champions. Now, that's still a big if, but you can see it and you can feel it within yourself that you can do that. So you need to be the team that's in front. And that's why it's so important United keep up the pressure against when they played them firmly.
The pressure's on both. I mean, as Alan says, it's an exceptional season. United have always got that thing that we always mention. They're Dundee United in the Championship, so only first place will be regarded as success. But as well as the points total of the two of them, they look like title-winning teams, because when they play well, they win well. Mm-hmm. When they play badly, are our second best in general play, they can still come out with a 1-0 win. And I mean, that suggests that. I mean, that puts pressure on both of them, doesn't it? Because United have to go in to tomorrow night against Dunfermline thinking Raith will win on Saturday.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more pressure on United. I think that kind of goes without saying. But internally, I do think that there will be also a pressure on Raith Rovers, because they'll be thinking to themselves, this is our best chance since 1997 to be a top flight team in Scotland. That is a lot of internal pressure. You can say that externally people don't expect you to win the league, people expect Dundee United, fine, but within that football club they'll know that this is their big chance. This is it. Who knows what next season will bring? You know, who knows who'll come down? You know, all these variables. What they do know is they're 1 point off top of the league with 8 games left. This is their big chance, and the pressure comes from that without a shadow of a doubt. The onus is bigger on United, clearly, from out with and internal. But I think this notion that Raith Rovers have got a free hit at this, maybe from the outside, but I think within that dressing room, they will feel the nerves. They will feel the personal feeling of, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
I've always thought one of the daftest sayings in football is, they're the underdogs, there's no pressure on them. I remember it being said to me when Dundee were playing Aberdeen in 95 in the League Cup final, and Dundee were a first division team, as was them, and somebody said, there's no pressure. You're still running out in front. I mean, at that day, Dundee were still running out in front of 50,000 fans. Yeah. Even though you're not expected to win, and they didn't, you're going to feel some pressure when there's that many people wanting you. And likewise, as Alan says, Raith have got a prize in front of them that's huge. And that, but even though it'll still go down as a great season if they finish second and still don't get up via the playoffs, there's still pressure there, because it's what they want. It's what they're aiming. And they've got a nice mix of youth and experience at Raith Rovers, but they've got quite a few experienced, Byrne, Stanton, Watson, the boy Brown, they all know a couple of injuries at the start of next season, you might be sitting in October in mid-table saying, well, we're not going to get relegated, but we're not going to get promoted. So it's not automatic if they don't go up that they'll be right in the thick of a promotion race next season. So there is pressure on them too.
I think so. Alan's absolutely right. I mean, we're doing rated disservice. I mean, obviously, I think there is more pressure on Dundee United because they're a bigger club. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But Raith are feeling the pressure as well. As Alan says, they're within touching distance of getting back to the Premier League for the first time in about 30 years. So, of course, there's pressure on them. And there's an expectation now from Raith Rovers. There's an expectation that they can actually do this. And even more so because in a two-horse race, they have the edge against Dundee United when it comes down to personal games between the two. So if they can get results over the next couple of weeks and it'll set up a cracking, an absolutely cracking match at Tannadice.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a winner-takes-all sort of thing scenario, and that will be a powder keg, a pressure pot situation for both clubs. But for me, I still think, and I said this last week, well, Raith have bounced back with two wins, and I take my hat off them for doing it, I still feel Dundee United are the more informed team of the two. I noticed at the weekend there, I know it was Arbroath, but Jim Goodwin actually brought back Fotheringham. I think he brought back Middleton as well from the Morton victory during the week. And Miller Thompson, who's an attack-minded player, he didn't drop out the team. He actually went back to right back to replace Grimshaw. So I think Jim Goodwin felt this is a game we can get goals in, and it was. And to be fair, you know, I saw some of the match and there was some comic cut defending from Arbroath. Yeah. But it's very difficult for a part-time club. I think Tam O'Brien might have just been back or for a couple of games. But it's very difficult for a player that's part-time to be out for so long and come back.
Yeah.
And you've got United's forwards flying about all over the place.
They only train what? Twice a week?
Exactly.
I mean, it probably hasn't trained
but that's,
at all.
That's not Dundee United's problem. They've got to go and do the business. But Dunfermline might pose a different test for Dundee United on Friday night. I saw them against Raith Rovers. The lack of cutting edge, Dunfermline, there's no doubt about that. But they've got something about them.
Yeah.
They've got something, and they're in this position, Tom, in the league.
They've had some good wins.
Yeah.
They've got this thing where they seem to
but it's so, get a good it's win so and then a couple the of bottom, they need points on the board.
I was going to say, we're talking about pressure for Dundee United and Raith Rovers. There's pressure for Dunfermline. Yeah. A club that quite rightly feels that one day soon they should be back in the Premier League or could be, and they're sitting thinking just now, we don't want to go straight back down to the League One.
Yeah, what 1 point separates ninth and sixth, so it's an extraordinary division in terms of those teams trying to avoid the relegation playoff, if that is indeed what they're trying to avoid, without wanting to write off Arbroath too early. So it's
they're only 5 points off the promotion playoff and 1 point off the relegation playoff. It's crazy.
Yeah, what is the verdict that comes from that? It's the fact that every single game pretty much that you play between now and the end of the season, the other team's going to have something massive riding on it. So you're not going to be playing too many teams that are coasting during the run-in. So every game's going to be a battle. Every game's going to be against a team fighting for its life. So it's it'll be a fascinating run in, and it's interesting what Bear says there about the changes in the team on Saturday compared to midweek. And I think Jim Goodwin is starting to find maybe his battling 11, which you can beef up the midfield, you can play for scraps, you can make sure you don't concede a goal. And he's got his Tannadice team where you bring back your two wingers, you play with Watt and Louis Moult up front. It's good that he has that versatility. It's good that he has that options. It's a level of depth that a lot of teams in the division don't have in terms of which one of those sides he plays against Dunfermline. I think you might get a bit of both. I think he will look to beef up the midfield, but I don't think there's the need for quite as many personnel changes as we're against Morton. I don't think Dunfermline are quite the same type of side. It'll be very interesting to see who they play. I mean, the key, and it was great that he was in the training pictures in midweek. Another start for Ross Docherty, it would be terrific.
I was about to say, you might have your attacking 11 for home games, but you'd still need a battler, and he's got Ross Docherty fully fit, which is a great thing for him, isn't
he's played three games in a row for the first time since October, and United still have not lost a championship football match that he has started. It's the difference when he's in the team and out of the team is extraordinary. His win percentage, Dundee United's win percentage in the league when Ross Docherty plays is 79%. And I think I've not done it without it because it'll obviously be updated. But the last time I counted it up, it was 41% without Ross Docherty. So,
George, you might wonder why Alan's gone into such great depth about Ross Docherty. And it is great for Ross Docherty. So, but it is only 3 games, I hear you ask me, George. But I do remember before he'd kicked a ball for Dundee United, you said he would be a very good signer when some people were saying, signed a boy from the lower leagues. How's that going to get us promoted?
I thought he'd be a good sign. I don't think he'd be as good as he has been.
Oh, don't underplay it, man. take the glory.
Take the credit, Alan.
Yeah. Because he is. They're a different team with him in it, aren't they?
Yeah, fine. I called it from day one.
You told Jim Goodwin to sign him, didn't you?
I called him the Partick Pirlo. Dundee
got the Partick Pesh. Yeah. And Tiffany, and then you got the Partick Pirlo.
Exactly. The only losers in this was Partick. His availability is massive, and it's all fine that we can pinpoint players' performances and it's visible how important he is to the team, but it's also backed up in numbers, it's backed up in every bit of data you want to look at. And if Dundee United for the next 8 games can start with Craig Sibbald and Ross Docherty in midfield, it will exponentially help their chances of winning this league.
And ironically, I think I'm right in saying this, and you'll correct me because you know your stats, but ironically, the only problem with Ross Docherty this season has been getting him on the park, getting him fit. But in terms of his career, he is a player who usually plays every week. So you've got to hope he's had his bad sort of 6-7 months of his career in terms of injuries, and he'll be there until the last kick of the ball this season.
The problem is that he plays every game.
He's played a couple of times when he maybe shouldn't have.
To an extent. But even last season, ending the season with 7 games in 26 days, it was too much. Given the way he plays and given the way he trains. Now, everyone's an expert and with the benefit of hindsight, and he's an experienced player. And I think by his own admission, he would say that he always wants to play and always wants to train at 100 miles an hour. And maybe after the way the season ended at Thistle, that wasn't the right attitude to come into United with. Maybe he should have, taken it a little bit easier because, Jim Goodwin's pre-seasons are tough and he was straight into the first team on July 15th. And maybe a little bit of an extended break would have been beneficial, but, we're all geniuses with the benefit of hindsight. And sometimes you have to trust a player's knowledge of his own body when he gets to the age of 30. So,
and also, it's hard to change style. I remember being told, and it's not a club or two people I know at all, never mind well, but I remember being told Tommy Wright at St Johnstone used to say to Murray Davidson, you need to modify the way you play. You're not injury prone, but the way you go in for a challenge, you're going to get hurt because it's so full on.
It's really interesting.
And
to
he
say
couldn't
that.
Do it. The lad just couldn't do it.
The last time I spoke to Rossi, actually specifically said, they've sat down and they've worked on how he has to perhaps change just his outlook in training just at the moment and to kind of his workload and just adjust things. So they are. It's not an exact medical science as science, but it's not an exact science in the sense that everyone's bodies react differently, and you're talking about the variables with a player that's got miles on the clock and all that sort of stuff. And United are sort of learning, and Ross Docherty's learning on the job in terms of how to see out this season. You can almost reset over the summer, I would like to think, and next season will be a bit more normal in that regard. But clearly, for whatever reason, Ross Docherty's body just hadn't quite held up, certainly in the first half of the season, given the way last term ended the workload and going straight into this season. But it seems that, and touching wood, you can hear that as hard as I possibly can.
Sound effects this
I don't think that's real wood, to be honest.
Oh, no. I'll blame the plywood when he was down with a thigh strain.
Yeah, forget George's a country boy at heart. He knows wood when he sees it. That didn't sound quite how I thought it.
Get the bleeper out.
That was a terrible time to take a breath. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I really don't think I can go back to my original point, whatever it might have been after that. So let's just move on, shall we?
No, I'm going to go on the huff anyway.
Oh, good Lord.
In my mind, I was thinking trees, George. I just want to make that clear.
Freudian slips have finally come out.
But since we're moving on, you've already touched on it, and it's something that was actually highlighted to me last week by a United fan. How many Friday games of these poor... And I can't remember what the exact thing, but I do know BBC contract with a championship limits the number of home games you can move for any given team.
Yeah.
But it doesn't include the away games. Yeah, so
I think
hence
it's two home games a season, I think.
At home. I think so, yeah. You can then have eight of your away games.
Yeah. I mean, you guys know better than me, but I mean, Dundee were on a lot last season as well, weren't they?
It's always been fair bit, yeah. Everybody, the top team in the championship. It's because I think it's to do them
the fan base.
3 month
well. They know people are going. Yeah, people are going to watch.
So. Yeah, absolutely. That's it. Their box office, and it probably shouldn't be all about that. It's a public service broadcaster, however, they want to service as many fans as possible. And
yeah. I should say the fan that complained to me did also say, he said, too many Friday night games, too many Friday night games, but there's that wee bit of ego. He said, but by the way, why is the game against Shrewsbury Rovers not on a Friday? And I was like, oh, cake and eat it.
It's tough when it's a big journey, but yeah, there's been some right good Friday nights as well. Like, see if you get an Arbroath or a Dunfermline or a Raith Rovers away, that are, you know, for the quite know what the trains are going to be like in this country, but if the trains are running well, that are reasonably easy to get to, then those are cracking away days. However, if you get
totally understand the BBC, they're getting great games.
If you're Friday night,
I must admit, when Dundee were in the championship last season, I didn't really enjoy watching Dundee because it was at the game, but I quite enjoy Friday nights. Now Dundee are in the Premiership, I quite enjoy watching the game that's on a Friday, because more often than not,
You get
value for money. It might not be.
I want United or Wraith.
Yeah,
I'm selfish about the best. But the travelling support suffers.
It's not the best for quality, and I'm sure most supporters would admit that. But what you get, you do get value for money. You get goals, you get action. It's entertainment. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
That Wraith Rovers Partick Thistle game earlier this season. Did it finish 4-3?
Yeah.
So. Probably the best game of football I've watched this season. You know, so it's a good product, you know, kind of straying away from the point. But see, BBC's Friday Night Championship, it's turned into good appointment for you.
And I do think at times it's maybe since the arrival of satellite TV 30 odd years ago now, we've got an exposure to the biggest leagues in the world that maybe at times makes us a wee bit snobbish. And I'm not giving myself any credit here because it was just a word that popped in my head. But we do have to remember it's meant to be entertained. The first thing you want to be is entertained. And if that's cost us the odd mistake here, who cares? If you're on the edge of your seat and having a right good 90 minutes viewing, that's what you want, isn't it?
Well, I think the captures you for 90 minutes. I think it's when it's poor that you're more likely to switch over. But what we say about the Championship, there's very few games like that. And they tend to go right to the wire. So, you know, it's worth staying tuned, and you get your reward more often than not with late goals, it's sending off, you know, some maybe a punch up here and there, who knows, like, you know. But there's always, like you say, there's always entertainment involved, and that's the most important thing.
And there is quality as well, to be fair, because I mean, I know it's a very, very rare occurrence occurred this week. When Sean Dillon praised Miller Thompson. Now, Sean Dillon is the most generous guy you could meet. He's the most encouraging guy you could meet when it comes to players of all ages. He's the most helpful guy you would meet. But what he doesn't do is give away praise easily. He will not criticize. He'll not say that lad is no good enough. He'll say, no, thanks, I don't want. I'd rather not say anything. So, but when he does give someone praise, it's obviously someone he sees something in.
I thought it was really interesting what he was praising Miller Thompson for as well. Because I think we can all visibly see that he's a confident lad, he's pacey, direct, got a good set piece, and has showcased his versatility. Those are things that you can glean with the you know, total absence of any knowledge that I've got. However, what Sean Dillon was talking about was more his mentality, his ability to walk into a dressing room of experienced pros and immediately sort of, you know, throw himself into it and be part of the group. And every team meeting, every team bonding session, just throw yourself into the experience of being a young player out on loan and develop and use it to shape you and, you know, actually feel part of Montrose rather than, well, I'm a Dundee United player, I'm just killing time here and trying to score a few goals. It spoke, you know, Sean is the one that outlined this. That was perhaps one of the most impressive things about him, because it's tough being a young player going on loan. It really is. You know, imagine any walk of life, being a teenager and walking into a room full of grizzled pros.
41-year-olds like Sean Dillon.
Whatever industry you're in, it's a...
You're going to be in awe of people.
It's a challenge. It spoke to a kind of maturity and determination, which are sometimes the intangibles that are the difference between a talented young player making it at Dundee United and a talented young player ending up at, you know, and I'm not going to list teams because it'll sound disrespectful.
Part-time football. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Back in part-time football. Yeah. So it's, I thought it was a really interesting chat, and for what it's worth, also a doff of the cap to Sean Dillon, who made his 600th appearance in Scottish football just at the weekend. And, you know, if you did read that Sean Dillon interview about Miller Thompson, just know that next week we'll have a Sean Dillon interview that actually is Sean talking about more about his new contract and his time in Scotland. So,
is the paper going back to broadsheet size?
I have
speak forever.
I've tearfully cut out some. I've tearfully cut it to length. As good as it was.
I think what's fascinating about Miller Thompson is it's going to be interesting to see the last 7 or 8 games. I mean, he's obviously been given his start last week and he's played quite a few games now. Will Jim Goodwin trust him enough to put him in some of these big games that are coming up? You know, I don't think he'd doubt his ability to go and do it, but it's now getting down to, as we've spoken about, the pressure situation.
Yeah. Is it that time of the season where the slightest hint of a drop,
whereas possibly
in October, November, you give him another game or two, but you maybe go, whoa.
I think he believes. Not just him. I think he believes in his consistency and his competence. The only thing that I think, if he does come out of the team or he is moved to the wing, then it will be a physical decision rather than a mentality decision, because he isn't as Liam Grimshaw's quite a diminutive player, but he's broad and he's strong and he's experienced.
Miller Thompson looks 7 stone soaking wet. He still gets stuck in. Oh, he's still quite slight.
So if there is a team that are able to say, do you know what, we'll pin a big physical left winger on you and play off seconds, knowing that you'll outjump Miller Thompson. If there's that situation that tactically Jim Gooden has to think about, that might be a reason why Miller Thompson would come out of the team. But I don't think there'll be any credence given to a worry about his maturity or ability to handle pressure, because he's played in big games already. You know, there's every game for United is pressure. He's played in games where they've gone behind. That's pressure. So I don't think he'd be worried about that, but there might be sort of tactical and physical decisions to be made.
As long as he's a delight... I'll say that again. I was trying to be too clever there. As long as he's a delight under the Friday night lights tomorrow, that's what matters.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.